From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. More than 80,000 cases of COVID-19 have been diagnosed in the world. Of the 53 that are in the United States, you might know there are 15 in California. One of those is in Sacramento County. We'll get back to that detail in just a bit. COVID-19 is now the acronym for Coronavirus Disease 2019. And this, of course, is the outbreak that started in Wuhan, China in December. More than 2,700 people have died, most of them in China. Yesterday, though, we saw new numbers related to this outbreak. A Dow Jones drop of more than 1,000 points. A bad day for the S&P 500. It fell 3.4%. European markets had their worst day since 2016, and the global markets overall lost more than $1.7 trillion. All of that in a day. So there's a little bit more to the numbers story. The Trump administration is shaping an ask of Congress for what's being reported as $2.5 billion to fight COVID-19, with $1 billion of that going toward vaccine research and the production of vaccines. So we now have a medical science story that's become a money story. And with that, Jock O'Connell's in the studio with me. He's an international trade economist based in Sacramento. Jock O'Connell works for the research and consulting firm Beacon Economics. Glad to have you back with us.
Good morning, Beth. Good to be back.
So what's happening to the markets and why yesterday?
Well, first off, I want to say I'm feeling fine personally. No sniffles, even though I was in China a few months ago. The market. The Dow Jones average is not a particularly good indicator of what's happening in the real economy. The market on Wall Street is much more subject to hysteria, to people trying to drive the market one way or the other. There was reference that 2 years ago was the last time that the Dow dropped over 1,000 points. Well, in fact, 2 years ago, it dropped twice in 1 week by 1,000 points. And that was because of inflation fears. The market, obviously, the Dow, the S&P 500 have all recovered. They all recovered fairly promptly. It would not be surprising if by the end of this week that most of the losses of the last day and a half or so are earned back. So the market itself is not a particularly good indicator of what's going on in the real world. What's of concern are some of the longer-term implications here, as well as some short-term impacts here in California. To go to the latter first, I'd say that one damaging aspect of this has been the virtual suspension of tourism and business travel. California in the last year saw a couple of million Chinese visitors who all spend a good deal more on a per capita basis than visitors from Europe. So this is a substantial hit.
Do you know what's happening right now with tourism?
I went online this morning to try to book a flight to Beijing. I couldn't.
Flights canceled.
I was talking to a friend, a Chinese-American friend last week who was trying to make her way back to Chongqing. She had to plan a very convoluted route that did not involve direct flight. There are nonstop flights from San Francisco normally to Chengdu, which is fairly close to Chongqing. But she said she had to go to Tokyo in hopes of then getting a plane maybe to Hong Kong or to Bangkok and then into China.
So but we still have a U.S. State Department travel ban in place, correct?
Yeah, and according to the media this morning, the Center for Disease Control has advised American tourists not to go to South Korea. So what's happened is that, you know, this is not only a hit to the tourism industry, but to all of the people who feel the need to do business on a face-to-face basis. And in countries in Asia, it's an important to have a face-to-face relationship with your customers or your suppliers. And that's been virtually cut off. And there's no telling how long that will persist. What this ultimately leads into, though, is questions being raised about the wisdom of globalization, the fact that we've become excessively dependent upon sourcing goods from other countries, and in particular from China. Over the past few years, there has been a steady migration of foreign investment in China, moving factories to other places. It began as the cost of labor, the cost of doing business in China started to increase, and it became more economically attractive to manufacture in, say, Vietnam or Malaysia, or going around into the Indian Ocean as far as East Africa. I remember an incident, this was about 12, 13 years ago now. I was having lunch in Hong Kong on two consecutive days with Chinese businessmen who had manufacturing enterprises up in Guangdong province, just over the border from Hong Kong. And at the end of the luncheon, they handed me not only their business card saying where they lived or worked in Hong Kong or in Guangzhou, but also business cards that said that they had offices in Nairobi. And I thought, why Nairobi? Mm. They said they're looking to diversify. They being Chinese, decided at that time, 12, 13 years ago, that it was going to ultimately be necessary for them to move to another location. And where it would be cheaper and more advantageous for them to manufacture. What we've seen over the past several years is more companies have been doing this and moving their manufacturing enterprises out of China. That process was accelerated by the trade wars that were President Trump imposed tariffs on a wide range of Chinese products and encouraged companies to move to other countries in order to supply the needs of U.S. importers. And now this virus is more than anything else, I think, reinforced that lesson that it's important to diversify. And I think this is going to be the hallmark of economic planning and foreign investment strategies going forward to diversify their investments.
With what you're saying, could we talk about Apple in particular? Because Apple was highlighted with all the factory shutdowns in China immediately, so business slowed. I guess some of the factories have continued to start up. Apple just had its quarterly guidance report. What's going on?
They became dependent upon manufacturing their product, or the final assembly of their product, let's put it that way. It's a complex strategy that Apple uses to manufacture. I bought an iPad over the weekend, a new iPad mini, and on the box it says, designed in California.
Designed
in California. Well, also designed and more importantly for them, marketed in California, because a large part of their revenue comes from being successful at marketing their products.
But manufactured perhaps in China.
Well, more properly manufactured in various locations around the world. Mm. China is the final stage of the assembly. So you've got components in, say, an iPhone that come from South Korea, from China, from Japan, from Taiwan, from Europe, German parts and software products that are developed in the United States and elsewhere. So all of these are brought together at manufacturing facilities run by a company with whom Apple contracts, named Foxconn, and they are in charge of bringing all of these components from around the world together at those assembly plants and then putting them together. That product is shipped then from China to, say, the United States, and it's recorded as an import of China, and the value is the full import value of the phone, which may be $400 or $500, when in reality the value added in China was very low. Essentially, they assemble the parts that have been built somewhere else. That skews the trade statistics, but it also calls into question the strategy of relying upon manufacturing to be done in one or two locations in what's become an increasingly vulnerable country. China was made vulnerable because of the trade wars, by increased tariffs, but now more than before by the emergence of this virus.
There are two parts to the story, though. One is that, for example, the iPhone supply is temporarily decreased because of manufacturing, but also sales in China. People aren't getting out, people aren't buying, and I think China is something like 20% of the overall sales for Apple.
You're absolutely right, and this is true of anybody who's trying to sell goods in China right now. Strangely enough, if you, in Hong Kong, which is not feeling as much of a brunt of this as China itself, there is a run on stores. People are not only desperate to get masks to wear, but apparently the preferred currency of exchange in Hong Kong these days is rolls of toilet paper, because those have run short. So it's a case of losing market demand in China because people aren't out buying, aren't going out to stores as often, and are probably getting more concerned about the longer term economic prospects for themselves and their country. So that would drive people to save more, spend less. So that depresses the demand for products either manufactured in China or imported into China. So that hurts things as well. But
what we're talking about, though, is sort of broader movement. Why yesterday? Why all of a sudden the skittishness and the big drop yesterday? I know that markets are temperamental, but Italy spiked cases yesterday. Iran's deputy health minister tested positive for coronaviruses. Are things like that big enough?
Yeah. The players on Wall Street had the weekend to savor and worry and fret. And all of the news was bad. The increased prevalence of the virus in South Korea, but also the fact that it was popping up elsewhere, where there was no real obvious connection with China. I mean, very often there was the Italians, for example, have a difficult time trying to trace exactly who might have brought this virus to their country.
But they went from three cases to 200.
And they've reacted with quarantines. Mm. And if this persists, if incidents of the virus are discovered or diagnosed in other parts of Europe and ultimately the United States and Canada, this is going to raise the question of, do we impose the kinds of containment policies that the Chinese incorporated? They dithered, frankly, for quite a while after the initial outbreak in Wuhan. But then they decided to contain and quarantine the city. Well, this is a rather extraordinary step. I mean, Wuhan is typically relegated to being a second-tier city within China. It has, you know, population of a mere 11 million people, which makes it larger than the New York metropolitan area. So you've basically closed off that city, and that policy has been replicated elsewhere. The Italians are now doing it on a more limited basis in their country. The concern is devising policies to deal with this that fall somewhere between complacency and hysteria. And that's going to be the difficult path to follow, particularly here in the United States, when the president of the United States is notoriously germophobic and is also bound to act impetuously. So we'll have to see how this plays out. But ultimately, the consequences of this virus have yet to be felt. And I think that, you know, frankly, I'm an economist, but the questions about how bad this is going to get and how much the economic impact is going to be is a question better posed to an epidemiologist at this point, because we simply don't know, and perhaps epidemiologists don't know exactly what the pattern is going to be of this disease spreading or suddenly stopping.
You're listening to Jock O'Connell. He is a trade advisor for the research and consulting firm Beacon Economics. He's based in Sacramento. I'd like to talk about California in particular beyond trade and tourism and what's happening, even with specific services or goods. It's been reported that car sales in China, for example, fell 92% in the first 2 weeks of February. We've got gold spiking upwards. What's the immediate impact here in the state?
What we're going to see starting right about now are fewer ships turning up at the state's ports. L.A., Long Beach, and Oakland all are major terminuses for Trans-Pacific trade. And the ports of LA and Long Beach alone handle nearly 50% of U.S. maritime trade with China. So one of the immediate effects we're going to see is, you know, fewer ships turning up, bringing in fewer cargoes and fewer containers. And this is going to persist for a while. And the impact there is not so much at the ports themselves, but down through the supply chains, leading to immediately in California the vast networks of warehouses and distribution centers that exist throughout Southern California in what's called the Inland Empire counties of San Bernardino and Riverside. There are armies of people who work at these warehouses and distribution centers, and most of these people are contract workers. They don't work for Apple or Walmart or IKEA. They work for an employment agency. And if their services aren't needed at the warehouse or distribution centers, they're sent home. And there goes their livelihood for how many days this period of unemployment lasts. So when there are fewer boxes to be processed through the supply chain, there are fewer needs for these laborers. So that's going to be an important impact on Southern California and those Inland Empire counties. The next phase of this is that once the Chinese factories are up running at full speed, the ports will be inundated. We'll see an unprecedented surge of cargo coming in that will largely overwhelm the ports and create massive congestion. So that in itself will delay the delivery of products to either retail establishments or to manufacturing facilities. You know, one of the real worries, not so much in California, but in the southeastern part of the United States, where in the upper Midwest, where there is a concentration of automobile manufacturing facilities, they depend to a very large extent on continuous deliveries of components from factories in China, many of them in the Wuhan area. So when that supply chain dries up, those facilities become inoperable. You can't source the goods easily from other places. So if you can't get key components, you can't build the cars. And when that happens, then there's an immediate employment impact of people being sent home. So that's how this impact will most readily be felt here, is that we will see a shortage of goods, products that we've long depended upon for China. And these are typically, you know, to a large extent, consumer goods. The largest imports from China are home furnishings, clothing, footwear, and that sort of thing. So you can imagine going into Macy's or another retailer sometime in the next few months and noticing that there's not as much merchandise on the shelves.
We're talking about two different impacts, one being the literal supply and demand, things actually being on a ship, coming to a store, being packaged, versus the markets, which are kind of a gamble. It's more temperamental.
It is. Wall Street's a place of emotions and very shrewd profit taking. So you can almost see that there is a number of shrewd players dealing with literally tens or hundreds of billions of dollars of somebody else's money, placing bets on how other people are going to react. And I think probably over the weekend, a lot of them decided, as news came out of the spread of the virus to other parts of the world, that the market would be prone to panic. And in fact, they just said, "Well, all right, we'll short stocks. We'll do the things that we need to do in order to take advantage of a panicked marketplace situation." So I think this is. That's why looking at what happens with the Dow is a very imperfect indicator of what's going on in the tangible world. But in the emotional world, it's a good indicator.
So we now have cases in Kuwait, in Afghanistan, in Iraq.
Here in Sacramento.
One here in Sacramento County, which again, we'll get back to. If the president, for example, is saying the White House is going to ask Congress for $2.5 billion. Some of it's going to go to vaccines research. he's speaking, obviously, to the American people and to fears and concerns and worldwide concerns. Is he also talking to investors with that? Is he also talking to the people who are skittish and driving the market to allay some fears?
Somebody in the White House over the weekend was trying to calm the market. Larry Kudlow, the president's economic advisor, came out very prominently and said people should go back into the market on Tuesday, today, and buy stocks. They're depressed value. It's a good time to buy stocks. When we started the program, I think the Dow was still down about 350 points today. It may have recovered. It may have gone down further since we started chatting. But as I say, somebody in the White House was trying to pour oil on the markets and to calm them and to indicate that everything's fine. We'll see how that works out. But the fact that the president's asked for $2.5 billion in financing for various programs and projects related to this outbreak, the outbreak is going to persist. I mean, people are going to get sick. People are going to die here and around the world. The government tries to figure out how much and what to spend it on and getting these projects through Congress. So this is it's a necessary response, but it's along the lines of closing the barn door.
Even the World Health Organization at this point and organizations domestically, the Center for Disease Control, are saying at this point we're still at that kind of fork in the road. We don't know whether this moves toward pandemic or whether we're getting somewhere toward containment. But to stay on the economic side of it, if you reflect back on SARS and that virus outbreak in 2003 and what it did, the U.S. stock market was able to rebound. I think it's pointed out, I was looking at a Money Watch article, pointed out that at that same time, there was the U.S. invasion of Iraq, the fall of Baghdad, and then the end of some major operations that were happening militarily. So it's hard to really look at the SARS arc and compare it directly to COVID-19.
Well, another reason for not looking at that as a model for what's likely to happen now, but a way that suggests that things might actually be worse is that when that epidemic broke out in 2003, the world was much lower along in the path toward globalization. China had only joined the World Trade Organization a couple of years before.
Markets
were smaller, and our dependence upon foreign goods, this whole global interconnectedness, not only of goods but services and research and educational exchanges, all of that was comparatively primitive to
in
what we have now.
Right.
And so globalization has benefited millions of people, billions of people. But at the same time, it has opened up a transmission belt for all sorts of things that we don't like, including the spread of viruses. The fact that I can hop on a plane and be somewhere, you can hop on a plane and be somewhere around the world tomorrow and then come back the next day suggests right. that the extent to which these viruses can spread back and forth quite easily. So just thinking of that, I'm on a plane to Barcelona on Monday. So,
Do you have any hesitancy about that?
No, not really.
You're not convincing me.
There's some trepidation. Actually, the trepidation is more that the airline will cancel the flight or that the Spanish authorities will put up certain barriers to the movement of people. But that all depends on what happens in the next few days, which goes back to the question of how do we steer a global response to this, not just the United States or South Korea, but figure out a response to this thing that puts us somewhere between complacency of, like Rush Limbaugh yesterday saying, it's just, it's a bad cold and the Democrats just using this to weaponize a target against the president, all the way to outright hysteria, when in danger or in doubt, run in circles, scream and shout, form of policymaking. So that's we have to chart our way in between those Scylla and Charybdis of policymaking evils.
Well, this is the discussion I wanted to have today. It's going to be an ongoing storyline with the continued movement of this disease. Do you know anyone who's quarantined at this point?
No.
Okay. And you said you're healthy. And you have no plans to go to China anytime soon, do you?
I was there in April.
Well, April, last April.
Last April.
Yeah, so you were well in advance.
Well, we're not quite clear how long the incubation period really is, but I suspect it's probably not 8 months or 9 months or so it's been there.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Make sure you wash your hands on the way out of the studio.
I will.
we'll do the same. That's our best deterrent that everybody says right now. And we're only laughing lightly about it because in all seriousness, we are going to talk about this being the flu season and this one case in Sacramento County after a short break. But Jock, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. I mean, it's certainly nothing to sneeze at, but it's been a good conversation. Thank you.
Jock O'Connell is a trade economist with Beacon Economics. We posted a few links to some related stories. They are at capradio.org/insight. After a short break, we will check in with Dr. Dean Blumberg from UC Davis Children's Hospital. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.